Jeff, let's begin with you. You're right now working on the 2040, that seems like a long way out, the 2040 long-range transportation plan for the First Coast. Tell us about this process.
Yeah, it is a long way out. It is, and it is the difficult part when we're reaching out to the public with something that's so long-term. And the important thing that we're trying to get out with this message is their involvement today, because when we look at transportation projects and the amount of time that it takes to deliver those projects, it's the decisions we make today that lead to the types of improvements that are happening out there now, whether it's roadways, transit, or other investments. So we're developing a long-range plan looking out over the next 20 years that are really looking at all modes, from roadways to transit to rail improvements to the use of technology on the road system, as well as bicycle and pedestrian.
Everything under the sun.
That's correct.
Brad Thoburn, tell us a little bit about how JTA plays a part in all of this.
Well, we're a partner with the TPO and DOT and the city and others in terms of delivering and planning for transportation throughout the region. We really focus in terms of the long range plan on the transit side and provide a lot of the inputs to this to the needs and cost feasible plan that Jeff has to put together. So some of our focus is on transit. I know that in this plan update, there's been a greater emphasis on transit because as we grow as a community, we see that, while there's still demand for road widening, there's a greater demand for public transportation options. It's really about mobility choices. That's why you see much more, not only about transit, but pedestrian and bicycle improvements that are identified in the plan.
Yeah, and that's only expected to continue, correct, James?
That is correct. And the fact that we're continuing to look at ways to expand the transportation system overall is important. And it's the partnership that you can often see demonstrated between the North Florida TPO, the other transportation agencies such as JTA, Jacksonville Port Authority, and so forth, that really makes us a success here in this region. But it is looking at transportation as a whole. The multimodal aspect is very important because it's about moving people and goods. And that's where the Department of Transportation has also taken a strong look. It's not just the mobility of moving people, but it's the movement of goods as well that impacts all of Northeast Florida from an economic standpoint, from a livability standpoint, from a quality of life standpoint. So our focus is to be partners with our other agencies to help deliver transportation projects that benefit the entire region.
And if you're just joining us, we have officials with the FDOT, former FDOT, the JTA, and the TPO all together here in Studio 5 right now. Lots of calls already. We'll go to your questions in just a moment at 549-2937. Now, Jeff, as you said, this is an ongoing process and you want the public's input. But if we were to forecast ahead to the year 2040, can you paint a picture for us? What will the area look like when it comes to transportation?
Right now, when we look at the plan, and as Brad had mentioned, the focus has grown significantly on transit. We're recognizing this for two reasons. One, the need for mobility choices, but we're also recognizing the limited funding that's available to continue to widen the road system. So we want to look at a balanced system now, and I think that's what we're looking at in the long term of the future. We're looking at much more of a transit-oriented network, if you will. We're looking at a more bicycle, pedestrian, friendly environment as we continue to make investments in that. And we're looking at a system on the road network at this point that also looks more in the direction of what we call user fee-based facilities, managed lanes, express lanes, and those sorts of types of projects, just simply because we don't have the funds. Just to offer some perspective and why the impact and involvement of the public is so important, when we look at this plan currently and all the needs that we've identified over the next 20 years, it's about $27 billion worth of improvements.
Wow.
And when we look at the revenue that we expect from federal and state and local funds over that same period, it's about $7.8 billion. So we have a pretty lengthy gap. Yeah, huge gap. So we have a very tough decisions to make, and that's why we're seeking public input.
And we'll go to your public input in just a moment as the callers are flowing in at 549-2937. So, Brad, given that public transit is an imperative, JTA is looking at that, but the funds aren't there, how can the First Coast address this, especially given that we're one of the most far-flung, biggest spread-out metropolitan areas in the country?
Well, we do need to have a conversation about how we develop more of a regional system. And JTA right now is really focused, as you know, on restructuring our routes and getting the local piece of that right, and then really looking to have a conversation beyond that. We're planning for commuter rail. We're also trying to advance. We've got a park and ride facility in Clay County, and we have express service there. We're having conversations with St. John's County as well. So, but in the future, we really, you know, from a funding standpoint, we need to make sure that our priorities are reflected in the plan, because a lot of what this is going to be is using our local dollars to leverage state and federal funds. And if you're not in the long-range plan, then you're not going to be able to access those funds. So that's why this process is so important.
Let's go right now to the feedback coming in from listeners. Lots of comments on Facebook, Twitter, and lots of calls. 549-2937. If you have a question about transportation anywhere on the First Coast, now's the time to call in. Let's begin with Mark on the West Side. Hey, Mark. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning. I certainly support more bike lanes. I think any major city that you look at in the United States has lots and lots of bike lanes, so I certainly support that. But you keep mentioning the funding problem, and I'm sure that's probably a problem in every other city too. But if we have such a funding problem, why is it that we are still continuing to run the Skyway Express, and we're subsidizing that? It changes every year, $3 million, $4 million, $5 million, I have no idea now. But it clearly does not work, really. I mean, it gets people from parking lot to parking lot pretty much. And it's fun to ride, but you know, it does not serve a real transportation need that the rest of the city has, and we're operating this at a huge loss. I mean, is there any talk? I hope to God there's not any talk of expanding it. I'm just hoping there's talk of maybe shutting it down.
That's Mark on the West Side. Brad Thoburn, what about the Skyway?
Well, I disagree with the assessment that it's not working. I think we had some challenges when it was built, because it was built around a plan to address problems with downtown parking and downtown congestion that really was not there by the time it was built. And then we didn't really stick to a parking policy downtown. But I will say this, we have over 4,000 trips a day on the Skyway. We saw great successes during the One Spark festival where we
people will use it if they have a reason to come in.
They will, and when we have conversations with the city about economic development and bringing businesses downtown, parking is an issue, and access to parking is enhanced by the Skyway. The Skyway is a downtown circulator, and I think that people always need to remember that public transportation, just like roads, don't make money. They're part of the public infrastructure to move people and goods. And so I think the measure that it's losing money every year is a misnomer, and we just need to get beyond that. And we need to figure out.
Roads don't make money.
But as far as the Skyway goes, you know, we have a significant investment by the taxpayer, and we're trying to look to how we can better utilize the Skyway.
And isn't
in the future.
There a new spoke planned for the new Unity Plaza development over on Riverside Avenue?
We're looking at an opportunity to extend it to the operations center on Riverside, which would access the new development. One of the criticisms of the Skyway has always been it doesn't go where I want to go. So you have a new development there that's going to have a fresh market over 1,000 apartment units. And so you're connecting those activity centers with employment and population, and it starts to work better.
Let's go now to Harold. He's along I-10. Hi, Harold. How's your drive going? Good morning.
Guys, doing great. Listen, we are in dire need of a mega truck stop that can have at least 500 trucks. Is there any plans in the works for this?
Where would you want it to go?
301 area, of course, where the two truck stops are there. If you've ever been there after midnight, you will see trucks lined up and down the roads. The rest areas just before you get into Jacksonville are just, I mean, they're swamped with trucks at night. That place for them to park, a facility for them. You know, we need a big mega facility so they can have a place, you know, to park at night and do their laundry, things like that, and much less fuel things need to be. Okay?
All right. Thanks for the call, Harold.
Please let me know if there are plans in the works.
All right. Let's find out. James Bennett.
Hi. As a matter of fact, there's not any plans for actually constructing a private-operated truck stop, but the department is continuing to look at how to move the movement of goods, and trucks are a critical component of that. We currently have underway several major investments in the Baldwin area to address some of the traffic flows there in Baldwin to help move those goods. That is a critical junction where US 301 comes up northbound to hit I-10 to go east and westbound. And so that is a very vital location for trucks. And as such, you see a lot of truck activity at that particular interchange. However, there are some other privately developed options that are looking at other locations and interchanges along Interstate 10 that I think will at some point relieve some of that truck congestion that you see there as far as their overnight stays and using facilities.
And if you're just joining the program, lots of calls this morning as we have officials with FDOT, the TPO, and the JTA all together in studio. What are your questions about transportation anywhere on the First Coast? 549-2937 as we go to Doran in Jacksonville. Doran, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to just ask about the 301 thoroughfare and see if there's any thinking about extending that or expanding it and making it a real four-lane thoroughfare that doesn't stop and have all the changing speeds and in the small little towns, and actually connect Gainesville to Jacksonville and make kind of a metroplex between Jacksonville and Gainesville. I think there's a lot of potential commerce that could come from a connected metropolitan area between those two areas.
That's a good question.
Here's what the FDOT people think.
Sure. Yeah. Great question. Thanks for that.
That is a great question. And thank you for asking this. The Department of Transportation looks at a much larger region than just the counties that make up the First Coast. We actually cover an 18-county district here, which goes from the Gulf of Mexico all the way to the Atlantic. And we cover a very large geographical district. And we are looking at the U.S. 301 corridor. We have a number of projects already planned and ready to be implemented over the next couple of years. We have a considerable investment at the interchange of I-10 and U.S. 301, as well as a complete Baldwin bypass to finish up the section to create a four-lane facility all the way around Baldwin. But not only that, further south into Stark, we have a fully funded segment of projects that will create a Baldwin bypass a Stark bypass in order to facilitate the movement of trucks through that entire area. And that facility will be built as a limited access or controlled access type facility, so it has limited number of lights, traffic signals, grade separations at major intersections in order to help the flow of goods, because we do recognize there is a connection between Gainesville and Jacksonville, and we continue to look at that not only from a mobility of people, but the mobility of goods as well.
Lots of questions. Jeff?
Yeah, Melissa, I wanted to add to that too, because James hinted at it. Also within this region, in a project that was partnered with the DOT and the TPO, was the funding of the Baldwin bypass that he referenced. And many of the truckers and those who use 301 know once you reach Baldwin, then you're going down US 90 and then take another left and you have the railroad issues. So funded in that project as well now is a bypass. So you would have a free flow of 301 around Baldwin and connecting back in, and creates a corridor now that has that kind of flow movement. One other thing I wanted to mention related to just trucking in general, while parking is something that has to be looked at, another means with which we can address some of that congestion that occurs is the use of technology, and that's why that's a big focus in the plan now. And specifically to trucking, we're developing now a truck information system using technology so that, as we know, for parking facilities like that, if they are full, the ability to convey that information to truckers earlier in their drive, so they have the potential to stop at another stop earlier in another state, for that matter. We're also using that same technology as it relates to port access. As many of these trucks are coming in for containers to pick up at the ports, the challenge you have sometimes is trucks, if the gates are closed for emergency or any other reasons, trucks are parked all up and down the road near the port gates. Using technology to convey that information early, that it's closed or that their container is going to be delayed, they can frankly stay out of the area until such time that it opens up. And just sharing that through technology allows that opportunity.
Well, I hope that truck driver heard those comments too. I hope he's still listening. We're getting calls meanwhile from across the listening area. Let's go up to Fernandina Beach this morning. It's Heidi in Fernandina Beach. Heidi, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
Good. I am calling about the question that was addressed earlier about the Skyway not being efficient. I come from South Florida, and we have something equivalent down there in Miami called the People Mover. And it was traveling pretty much on the same tack as the Skyway at one point. And then through a series of political moves, they finally connected it with what they called a metro that was coming from Dadeland into Miami proper. And everyone fought that tooth and nail for years and years because it was such an access problem with cars, because Miami was developed before the population came there. And once it was in place, you can't even get on it. It is so packed. And it is utilized beyond belief. What I cannot understand is Florida, topographically, is a flat state. Why on earth don't we have a light rail? Why don't we have, like, a public transit connecting us to each city? It would cause, like, Jacksonville in particular to thrive. If we had other counties like Clay and all of the surrounding areas coming into Jacksonville to work, it would create a huge mecca.
All right, let's talk about light rail. Brad Thoburn, every time you come in here, you get a question or at least one call about that. So what's the look ahead for rail?
Well, first of all, the caller's point is really good that, you know, the Metro Mover in Miami-Dade did not reach its potential until it was connected to Metro Rail. And so it's about the system, and the Skyway is part of a system, and so we have to tie it better to our local bus service. And then we also have to think about the future, where you know, the options like commuter rail and light rail we need to take a look at. And now, I think people have always kind of confused commuter rail and light rail. I think the first step for us, the most immediate opportunity, is developing light rail, because it does kind of have that regional connectivity, and it uses the freight rail right away, so it's a little more cost-effective solution. We're fortunate because we have a couple really viable lines that connect population centers with throughout the region. And that's one of the challenges sometimes you see with the freight rail lines, is they don't always go where you need to go. But the first line we're looking at is St. Augustine. We set priorities in the corridor in the region. So St. Augustine to Jacksonville would be the first segment we look at. And then the second would be down to Green Coast Springs on the CSX line, and then a northern line to Yulee. So we're in the process. We're developing we're in the process of what we call project definition for a New Starts project, and so we envision this being funded through the federal process. And so that process has actually changed over the last several years. So we're trying to get our work effort in terms of the planning in line with the federal process. So it's happening, and it's an exciting opportunity.
Meanwhile, the feedback on social media is just going crazy. People are so interested in this topic. Comments on Twitter, Facebook, lots of emails too. We'll get to as many as we can right now. Here are just a few. Jay tweets the show, "We need pedestrian lanes on all bridges. I see people walking across the Matthews all the time, and it's scary." Here's a tweet from John. "What is the time frame of the Outer Beltway completion?" How about that? James Bennett.
Well, thank you. We are actually moving the first segment underway now, and we continue to work on it very aggressively. We have the section from I-10 all the way down to Blanding Boulevard that is fully under construction now. That'll create a full interstate-type facility, grade-separated interchanges, fully automated tolling. There's no toll booths. You can move through at a very high rate of speed, so it really increases your mobility for the corridor. But we continue to look at how we make that connection from Blanding Boulevard all the way south to US 17, Green Cove, and to continue east all the way over to I-95. There are still some challenges with the ultimate funding for the construction, but we continue to address that in a very aggressive manner. We continue to fund a significant amount of right-of-way acquisition throughout the department's five-year work program, because it does take time. And it takes time and money, and we have to buy things in pieces as we can. So we continue to invest very heavily in the right-of-way and continue to move forward with the designing and permitting of that, such that as the project becomes more financially viable, we will be able to implement.
Lots of Facebook comments, too. Here are just a few. Mark wants to know when the JTA will make the Riverside Trolley a full-time daily service. Mick writes, will there be plans to include more bicycle access throughout the city? Robert, What is the city doing to incentivize more people to use public transit as opposed to traveling in their cars? So lots of questions. Jeff Sheffield.
I want to address some of the bike ped stuff because it's really gained, frankly, momentum, particularly in the last few years, just looking at trying to make sure that all of the systems are connected. Your ability to walk to a transit stop or your ability to connect with other modes, your ability to cycle safely in the community. And a lot of investments been made really on the planning side to make sure we're identifying the network. The TPO last year completed a really high-level evaluation on the four counties in Northeast Florida, completing a bicycle pedestrian plan. But within that, we identified what we called focus areas. And those are areas that are common sense in terms of a San Marco Riverside, which is high activity, a St. Augustine, a Fernandina area. Looking now at funding and developing very specific system plans for those areas. The most recent effort that we're about to begin, actually, is in the San Marco Riverside area, and it'll directly tie in to the most recent announcement with the Fuller Warren Bridge construction that will now include a multi-use trail within that bridge structure. Mm-hmm. What we want to do now is evaluate both sides and make sure that we're building the network within those two areas so that we're gaining the best value out of that project when the DOT builds it.
Patricia on the south side. Go ahead, Patricia.
Hi. I have a vision of a pedestrian and bicycle-only bridge crossing the St. John's because I, too, see people walking and even bicycling across the Arlington, across the other bridges, and it's unsafe. And I think it could be really amazing.
Pedestrian and bikes only. Thanks for that.
To answer the Arlington piece, the Matthews Bridge itself in desperately need of replacement.
It really does. It's 60 years old.
But a very expensive project. It's one of those types of projects when we talk about the long-range plan. That's a project that needs to stay on the radar, that needs to make the list in terms of the long-range plan. And so that it affords the opportunity to begin to design that project, move forward into right-of-way acquisition if necessary, and look at funding the overall improvement. When you look at the concepts of what may happen with a Matthews Bridge if and when funding were available, it includes significant transit, separated transit within the context of that bridge structure, and certainly contemplated in that would be potential bicycle and pedestrian connection as well.
Rick in Murray Hill. Hey, Rick, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ms. Ross.
Pleasure. Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. My question is something that's baffled me here. I travel from Murray Hill, I jump on 10, and then I hit 95 north when I go to church there. And I'm trying to figure out when 95 splits where you can take a left lane and then there's a right lane. You see what I'm saying? And you can even go off to the beaches there.
Like yeah, sure. Hospital. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Okay. What if you take the inside left lane, I tried to get back over to the State Street side to go downtown. And you got to go all the way across the freeway.
Right.
With traffic coming. I'm like, was there a scientist design that or was it a school kid?
I know exactly what you're talking about, Rick. It is confusing.
If you're from out of town, and you're going downtown, that's a serious accident waiting to happen.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Let's talk about that interchange, the big I-95, I-10 interchange. That's a huge connection point in our area. James.
Thank you. We've had a lot of comments and concerns expressed over that particular interchange after the original design was completed. And we're looking at going back and doing some adjustments to the signage itself to help drivers better understand how to utilize the interchange itself. Simply stated, if you get into the far left lanes, that allows movement to go through town. That should, if you're wanting to go through Jacksonville and not get off at one of the exits, you should get to the left lanes to go 95 north or south. However, if you're wanting to get off to go into the downtown areas, whether it's going north to get off to one of the North Bank interchange, you should use the right side of the interchange, and that allows you to exit all of your lanes without having to cross multiple lanes to get off at State Street, as you indicated. And so the department is looking at making some adjustments to the signage in order to help drivers better understand how to utilize that interchange. It also ties in big to the project that is now proposed to modify the Fuller Warren Bridge, which will help improve the overall flow of the interchange itself and help eliminate some of the weave movements that we're currently experiencing today. So again, there's efforts underway now to help improve that interchange.
Very good to hear. Meanwhile, so many callers waiting on hold. Wish we could take every single one of you, but let's just take one more call. It's Landon in Bay Meadows. Hi, Landon. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning, and this question is for JTA. I actually live in Bay Meadows, and I recently wanted to experience public transit, so I got on the bus right in front of my apartment on Southside Boulevard, and I arrived downtown, and there were several options to go anywhere I wanted to go in the city. And so my question is, instead of having riders come downtown to experience all these options, is there a possibility to have a transit where buses would be available on separate sides of town? So instead of having one transit or one Rosa Parks Center, maybe you can have North Side, South Side, Bay Meadows, West Side, Orange Park, that would serve those communities where populations are required to be moved with, you know, within
sure.
the region.
Yeah, thanks for that question. And Brad Thoburn, as you mentioned, those types of questions are what the JTA is working on right now.
Yeah, that's such a it's a question that we've heard a lot of. And what you see in our system today, it's a hub-and-spoke system, and we really force everybody downtown. And we've been looking at a total restructuring of our routes. That's a really common question and a concern that we hear. You know, our development patterns have changed a lot over the last 30 years, and in many ways, our system hasn't kept up with them. So we are going to provide those kind of options. Today, everything goes downtown, and the new system we're developing that will be unveiled on December 1st, you'll actually have 9 routes that do not go downtown, and we have significant crosstown routes with 15 on Edgewood and University. We'll have 15-minute frequency. We're going to have other crosstowns with high frequency, 30-minute frequency as well. The whole system is going to be totally transformed, and it'll be a lot simpler, more direct. And the other thing, one of the callers or comments you heard about making the system, the incentives for the system, really it's the key is making the system easier to use, more direct and more frequent and more user-friendly. And along those lines, we are unveiling a real-time passenger information application on the entire system on December 1st as well. So you'll be able to see on your smartphone, or you can text in or look or call in and find out when the next bus is coming. So that access to information, a simpler system that doesn't force you downtown on every route, is really something that's going to be a major improvement.
Yeah, and I'm sure the riders will love it. And in the meantime, let's close with Jeff Sheffield. Public meetings are going on this month. You want the public to give you and everyone here their feedback.
We do. The questions and the interests and the projects that we were talking about today are exactly what we're talking about in this long-range plan. It's critical that we have them in there, in the plan, so we can move forward with them, and we want your input. So we're having a series of public meetings. They will address each county within our area beginning September 16th through the 22nd. You will see meetings in Duval, Clay, Nassau, and St. John's that you can participate in. I would encourage you to go to pathforward2040.com is the website for the plan, or you can go directly to the North Florida TPO website for a link and get specific locations.
Right, and so let them know what's on your mind. Gentlemen, great discussion, so much interest. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were joined by Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of the North Florida TPO, Brad Thoburn, Vice President with the JTA, and James Bennett, Senior Engineer with Atkins Global, formerly with FDOT.